Hello, here is your KVNF regional newscast for Monday, April 2nd. After nearly a year of planning and work sessions, Delta County is releasing the draft master plan for public feedback. According to a press release, Delta County is hosting three open houses during the second week of April to solicit community feedback. These events will have a less formal structure than previous meetings, allowing for residents to drop in and review the plan. They can also talk with Delta County staff and planning commissioners anytime between 5:30 and 7:30 p.m. Each evening, a presentation will occur around 6 p.m., providing an overview of the master plan process, plan content, and the next steps. The rest of the meeting is an open house structure with different presentation stations set up around the room on different elements of the plan, including the vision, goals, and the future land use plan. The draft master plan will be available on the county's website, deltacountyplan.com, starting today, so residents have time to review the plan prior to the community meetings. For residents unable to attend a community meeting, the county is requesting that feedback be submitted either in the online community forum on the project website or via an email sent directly to the Planning Commission email address, planningcommission@deltacounty.com. Comments will be collected until April 25th. Once the review process is completed, the master plan will be presented in a public hearing in May. The three open houses hosted by the county, where the public can review the draft plan, begin a week from today. The first is on Monday, April 9th, at Hotchkiss Heritage Hall at 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. The second is Tuesday, April 10th, at Orchard City Town Hall from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. And the final open house meeting to review the draft master plan is Wednesday, April 11th in Delta at the Bill Heddles Recreation Center from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. The annual budget bill is making its way through the state legislature. It passed in the House, and debate over it is expected to begin in the Senate tomorrow. A strong economy has meant more money for a lot of priorities, such as roads and schools. As part of our weekly Capitol Conversation, Benta Berkland breaks it down with State House reporters.
Joining us today, we have Ed Sealover with the Denver Business Journal and Brian Eason with the Denver Post. Brian, it seems like there's something in here for everyone to like.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this budget debate has been a huge difference from years past. Lawmakers got $495 million for transportation. They got $150 million to boost annual school funding, and they got $225 million set aside to help with pension debt. Alongside that, on Wednesday, there was this hours-long debate where lawmakers were getting money for this or that. There was some money for drug treatment, for youth services, and for school security. So yeah, pretty much every special interest under the Golden Dome got some money.
And now it heads to the Senate, Ed, where we heard from the top Republican in the Senate, where they have the majority. He doesn't think there's going to be a lot of changes in that chamber, and he's pretty satisfied with the budget.
The trick is, he was satisfied with the budget that he saw before it hit the House on Wednesday. They tacked something like 32 amendments on there, Christmas treeing it up for every special interest program they could. I think there are going to start to be some battles over that. How much money is going to go to things like school safety or to environmental programs, or will any money go to film incentives? But the general substance of the budget will stay. Now, the biggest trick to this, though, is that, as Brian mentioned, there's $495 million going to transportation, but only 35% of that is going to go to state highways under what the Democrats passed. The Republicans in the Senate have said, I want to put that all to the state highway system. I don't want to put much into transit. I don't want to give any of that to cities and counties. I think that's where you're going to see the biggest fight, and that's going to be the continuing battle over how we fund transportation in this state.
One of the interesting wrinkles of that transportation money is that split between the state, local governments, and transit, that only takes effect if Senate Bill 1 fails. So there's still going to be these negotiations going forward of, you know, what does a transportation bill look like in this state?
Ed, do you think this debate this year seems a lot different to you than years past? You've covered the legislature for a long time.
even last year, and this has been typical of most of the past decade, the debate has been about what you cut, who's not getting what they want. This year, the debate was just about how much largesse you want to put into various things. It was especially after the newest budget forecast showed that the state was going to have a $1.3 billion surplus in next year's general fund. It wasn't a question whether education was going to get funding, whether transportation was going to get more funding. It was just a matter of how much. So whereas I think in the past, the budget was more about what the state could do on limited resources, this year's budget is a little bit more about what are truly our priorities and what are we willing to put money to when we actually have that money.
I think having more money really affected the tone of the debate. I mean, you didn't see these, you know, partisan tensions boiling over into, you know, late night filibusters or anything like that, which is kind of funny, right? Because it's an election year. I mean, we expect that stuff this year of all years. It's amazing what actually having money will do for people's mood.
Thanks, Brian Eason with the Denver Post and Ed Sealover with the Denver Business Journal. I'm Benta Berkland, and this is Capital Conversation.
Facebook users are learning new information daily about how their data has been used for political campaigning, including recent reports that Cambridge Analytica developed psychological profiles for at least 136,000 Colorado voters. But most Twitter users don't know that researchers also mine their tweets in the name of science. Eric Galatis reports.
New legal and ethical questions surrounding the business practices of Facebook seem to surface daily, but at the same time, a new survey finds most Twitter users don't realize that university researchers and others collect and analyze their tweets in the name of science. Casey Fiesler at the University of Colorado is co-author of a study on how tweets are used. Of about 68 million active U.S. Twitter users, Fiesler says 268 were surveyed with an average age of 32.
So this was a survey, and we asked people generally how they felt about this, whether they were previously aware. And one of the striking things we found was that the majority of our participants had no idea previously that this was a thing that could happen.
62% of the people surveyed did not know researchers used their tweets, and 61% thought it would be a breach of ethics. Twitter's privacy policy states that public information can be broadly disseminated to a wide range of users, including universities. Fiesler says there are uses for tweeted information in the name of science that may not be intended by people with Twitter accounts, but she doesn't think they need to stop using social media or lock up their information.
I think that most people know intellectually that Twitter is public. And I would actually say that research is one of the less harmful things that could happen to a tweet.
The study recommends that researchers develop ethical guidelines and standards for mining Twitter data from users. This is Eric Galatis reporting for the Colorado News Connection.
And that was your KVNF regional newscast for Monday. For KVNF News, I'm Eric Gould. Thanks so much for listening.